Alright, I do a real quick review of Daniel so far. And actually, if you go to the back page of your handouts, I finally made this that I've been talking about making for the last month. A little timeline of all the events in Daniel.
Perfect.
So you can see all of them.
You're a man.
So, chapter 1 is Nebuchadnezzar taking over Israel, 605, taking the boys into Babylon, and the whole, we're not going to eat your food, test us and see if we eat your food sort of a thing.
God, that was a long time
ago. Yeah.
Seriously?
That was like 3 months ago.
I bet we won't.
chapter 2, what's in chapter 2? Real quick.
Nebuchadnezzar's dream.
Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Yeah, the dream of the statue, right? Head of gold, chest arms of silver, belly of bronze, legs of iron,
Babylon,
feet of part iron, part clay.
Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome. I'm missing one.
No, you got it. And then future Roman Empire. Yeah.
That was it. There's only 4?
Yeah, well, there's 5.
Well, the fifth one doesn't count.
There's only 4 past ones, yes. So good, yeah, that was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We had the whole thing with Daniel, goes and interprets it for him. Chapter 3.
The giant statue.
Giant statue, fiery furnace.
Man-made.
Man-made.
Told to worship, they didn't. Thrown into the furnace.
Yeah. And Nebuchadnezzar, we think, comes to faith, but no, we learn later, didn't really, because chapter 4 is what?
His conversion.
His actual coming to faith. Yeah. How did that go down?
Was he crazy?
Yeah, that's a little later. So he's out. He gets a vision, right, of this tree that gets chopped down and to its stump, bound up with, right? And then angel comes down and interprets the vision, says, you're the tree. Or, excuse me, Daniel. Daniel comes and interprets the vision for him, says, you're the tree. You're going to get cut off. Your nation's going to get taken away from you. But God will restore you if you believe in him. And so Nebuchadnezzar says, oh, thanks. I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to get all proud and walk on the top of my thing and say, look at how awesome I am. And then right when he does, he spends years, I think it's 7 years, with the mind of a beast. Yeah, eating the living like an animal. Mm. Finally, he comes to his senses. His reason returned to him, as it says. So, trusts in Yahweh. Recognizes that he is the one who sets up and takes down kings. So yeah, what's the purpose of the book of Daniel? I just said it.
That.
What you just said.
Well, yeah, what did I just
God
say?
Is the one true king.
He sets up and takes down kings.
Right. God is the one who's actually in charge of all of this. He is the ultimate authority. He's over all of your kings. So first six chapters are going through all these different kings and God proving over and over and over again that he's the one who's actually in charge, not them. Chapter 5, which king gets shown up there?
Belshazzar.
Yeah, Belshazzar.
The guy with the handwriting on the wall.
Handwriting on the wall, right.
I can't understand this.
Yeah, it says Mene Mene Tekel Upharsin, which means you've been weighed, you've been measured, your kingdom's going to get taken away from you. And that very night, who takes over?
Persia,
and they put in Darius the Mede receives the kingdom at about 62 years old. So chapter 6 is about Darius and the lion's den. Right?
Which Darius wasn't actually in the lion's den.
Yeah, Darius wasn't in the lion's den, but as we learn, that story is actually all about Darius, not about Daniel. So, fun times. We can leave it open, that's fine. I think everybody's asleep anyway.
Get it together.
So that's the end of chapter 6 is the end of the historical narrative. Chapter 7 begins the series of visions. So the second half of Daniel is all these visions that Daniel has. The chapter 7 vision is sort of a rehash of the statue vision that Nebuchadnezzar had, right? 4 beasts.
Yeah. It's the lion, the
witch in the wardrobe.
No. First off.
No.
The lion, I know there was a leopard, a bear. That was the second one, the bear.
Lion, bear, leopard, and terrible beast that's crushing.
Yeah.
Right, and same basic interpretation as the statue with the different medals, right? We looked at that. Chapter 8 zooms in on.
Beast with horns.
Yeah, beast with horns. Little horn comes up out of the ten horns.
It cuts off three other horns.
Both greatly. Okay. Chapter 8, Ram and Goat, which represent which two nations?
Persia and Greece,
yeah. So we looked at the history of that, and we looked at the little horn on the goat, how it comes up later. I told you what I think it is. I think it's Antiochus Epiphanes 4. But lots of people will also say it might be the same as the little horn from the chapter 7 vision.
Future guy.
Right, future guy, antichrist sort of thing. Chapter 9, the first half is... What's Daniel doing?
Is this a courtroom thing? Or no? No.
First half of Daniel chapter 9. What's he doing for that whole...
Praying.
Yeah, there you go. He's praying. Doing prayers of adoration, telling God how marvelous and amazing he is, and asking for forgiveness for the sins of him and his people. Right. The idolatry that got them into exile. And what prompted this? Reading the Bible. He's reading the book of Jeremiah and he sees, oh, time of exile is about to be up. Let's pray. And he does. And as a response to that prayer, immediately, right, the angel Gabriel shows up and gives him what? What we studied 2 weeks ago. Yeah?
The
70-week prophecy, yeah. Most charted prophecy in the whole Bible. Maps out, depending on how you parse it out, maps out all of the rest of the future history of the world. So we looked at the different basic interpretations of that. Tried to dig into it a little bit. It was confusing. Yeah, chapter 10. So now we're up to where we are. So chapter 10, I have to give kind of the preface of... there's going to be quite a few of those, I got no idea what this is talking about, moments. Because chapter 10 is confusing. Almost as confusing as chapter 11, which gets even worse.
Stop.
We'll deal with next week. But chapter 10 is a little bit weird, even just the grammar is weird. The way he tells this story that occurs is kind of strange. And it's all kind of one story, one vision, one event from chapter 10 through the end of the book. One big vision event of Daniel being visited by angels and receiving this message. And if you flip through, it's a pretty good long section. It's at least a couple pages, longer than any of the other visions he's had. And it is a confusing vision. So chapter 10 sort of introduces the lead-up of what's the circumstances under which he received this vision. And so... that's what we're going to dig into tonight. Everybody with me so far on context? A little bit more context.
Yeah.
Verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel. So what year is it? The third year of Cyrus, which we know from history, is about 536 BC. What's going on in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia? Think back to way back when we studied Ezra. What does Cyrus do his first year in office?
Doesn't he let him go back to build the wall? Build the temple?
Right. He sends out a decree saying, go back and build your temple, Jews. So yeah, turn to Ezra chapter 1. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, this is Ezra 1:1, the word of the Lord... that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled. The Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he might make proclamation throughout all of his kingdom, and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and changed me to be... and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all your people, may his God be with him. Let him go to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He says to the Jews, go build your temple. Right? First year of his reign.
Hey, these guys started talking about me, so I'm going to let y'all go back and do this.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, notice it. It's so that the word of the Lord might be that was spoken through Jeremiah might be fulfilled, and God stirs up the spirit of Cyrus. So, God is the one in charge of the spirit of Cyrus making him do this. If you remember Ezra, he gets his... Zerubbabel is actually the one who goes back first. Him and Joshua get their group together. They go back and they start building the temple, but pretty quickly, what happens?
Some guys try to stop them.
Yeah, they get some opposition kind of put up in their face, and construction comes to a halt. And that happens in about year 2 of the return, and it continues for about 14, 15 more years, this halt on construction. It picks up again. So year 3 of Cyrus, king of Persia, is right about when word is getting back to Daniel and Jerusalem in Babylon that the rebuilding of Jerusalem has halted. Right?
It's almost like it's been 70 years. Or however much the exile was going to be.
Yeah.
So some of them weren't in captivity anymore, but some of them were.
Some of them stayed in Babylon. Yeah. So you got this weird tension, right? Daniel's staying in Babylon. A group of them are going back at this edict from Cyrus to go rebuild the temple, and they're getting just hammered with opposition. So they start rebuilding, and in about year 3 is when word that the rebuilding process of the temple has halted gets back to Daniel. Knowing this context, so there's some Jews back in Jerusalem trying to rebuild the temple, not really succeeding. Some Jews still in oppression in Babylon, Persia now. And Babylon got taken over by Persia. So once Cyrus took over, it became Persia.
But this meant like modern times, sounds like.
Now, meaning back then when Daniel was
speaking.
And yeah, you know the story of Esther, right? That's coming up in the future for Daniel. Right? It's about to happen. So in the third year, the king of Cyrus, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, and the word was true, and it was a great conflict, and he understood the word and had understanding of the vision. And in those days, Daniel was mourning for 3 weeks. So putting biblical history together, reading Bible in light of other biblical passages, I think part of the reason Daniel's in mourning is because he sees the stuff that's going on, and he thinks, we're coming out of exile, God's supposed to be restoring us, and he's learning, oh no, the building of the temple's not going well. What's the deal? I thought you were in charge, God. Why is this happening, right? The 7 years are up. I thought we were going back, and we were going to have our kingdom like you've been promising throughout all the prophets. And so Daniel gets this vision, and as you're going to see, this vision just basically traces through the future history for Israel, some would even say, until the complete end, vast future, still for us future, but at the very least for the next, like, 300 years of history for Israel. And it's God showing to Daniel, look, I'm still in charge, right? Yeah, it might not look great right now, but I'm still in charge.
And I got plans.
Yeah. Have faith. Right? We're going to see Daniel gets called a couple times. Oh, Daniel, man who is greatly loved. That was the name that he gave him right back when he was praying. Oh, Daniel, greatly loved, and it was because of his faith that he appears. So it's this sort of... I think there's a little bit more tension going on here than meets the eyes. Daniel's stuck in this historical position where he's had so much faith for his entire life. He's coming to the end of his life, and he's thinking this is when the kingdom's going to be restored to Israel. And he's basically being told by God, no, not yet.
And he's like, why?
You guys still trust me. Yeah. It's like, I've been here for 70 years. Why are you doing this to me? Yeah.
So, if anyone had a right to be depressed, it was them. I read through, I'm like, it's so weighty.
Yeah.
Crushed.
So that's the historical context that's going on. that's what all has happened since the last vision. They've had the decree to go back to Jerusalem, the temple started to be rebuilt, and then it got halted by opposition, and we're going to see it doesn't get restarted again for another at least 15, more like 50 years until Nehemiah finally gets on board. So, all that is as the context. Somebody want to read verses 1 through 9 for me?
In the third year, Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all, till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. Now on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of upaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great terror fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone when I saw this great vision, and no strength remained in me, for my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard the sound of his words, and while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground.
What translation is that? The NAS?
NIV. No. New King James Version.
New King James. Okay. Alright.
Why? Was it hard to follow?
No. There was just a couple of phrases in there that I was surprised it translated the way it did. But not a big deal. Just curious. Sorry. Off track. So, somebody summarize for me. What's happened? Daniel's out of the river. Yeah, okay. That'd be an interpretive conclusion. Might be an angel, but just real strictly speaking, what does the text specifically say? A man, and how is he described?
He's dressed nicely.
Yeah, dressed nicely, got gold around his waist, all of his appendages are shining and shimmering in different ways.
And his eyes, eyes look like flaming torches.
Yeah.
It was a little man.
Yeah. Surprisingly. Yes. Before that, though, there's like an introductory statement, right? Verse 1 and 2 is in the third person. Right? In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, word was revealed to Daniel, his name was Belteshazzar, word was true, and it was a great conflict, is how that was a phrase that caught me off guard in the translation. And he understood the word and had understanding of the vision. So this is like third person. This thing happened to Daniel. And then verse 2, it switches to first person. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. So the question is the first sentence summarizing the next 3 chapters, this whole big vision that he gets? Or is the first sentence summarizing a vision that he had in response to which he is mourning for 3 weeks and fasting? And then he gets this second, greater, more this vision of this guy standing at the banks of the river. You see the two possibilities?
Have to go through the next few passages to find them.
Possibly. Well, and that's the thing. There's no slam dunk answer to this. The text is unclear enough that either one is legitimate to a degree. Because he starts off in those days, and that's exactly what it says. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. So in what days is he talking about?
In the days after he received the vision?
Yeah.
In the days of the first year
of the reign of King Cyrus. So, so I'm telling you, I actually think that it's a summary statement of this vision, and he's been in mourning for 3 weeks because he got the news of the temple being stopped from rebuilding. My second choice, which is a verse later that really makes me doubt my first choice and want to go to my second choice, is that the first sentence is he actually did have some other vision that was great, that was true, right? The first, and the word was true, and it was of great conflict, and he understood the word, had understanding of vision. I think that's like a vision that we don't have any details about, just telling us that this happened.
And concerned a great war.
Mine too. That's right. I did listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a weird. I think I gave you a really literal translation of it. Did I give you that, or did I pretend to give you that?
Message was true in a great conflict, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision.
That's the most literal. It's the message true and great conflict. You supply the verb was, but that's specifically what the words say. So you've got to get a little bit interpretive when you're trying to explain it. And the question is the great conflict, is that talking about the content of the vision, or is that talking about Daniel's state in receiving this vision? He had great conflict about it. He was very upset and troubled. Again, either one, up to the interpreter. So, my second choice, which... The more I study this passage, the more it becomes closer to my first choice, is that he had some vision that we don't have any details about, but it was true, had great conflict, he understood it. And he's in mourning for 3 weeks about that vision. And the reason I come to that conclusion is verse 12. So, later on, spoiler alert, an angel shows up to explain this vision of this guy that he just had. And he says, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come before you, too, because of your words." And he goes on to say, "I've been trying to come to you for 21 days, 3 weeks." However, that's how long Daniel's been mourning, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the deal. Like, he had one vision, and then he had this other vision. And this is like kick-starting the revelation from the angel that's explaining this whole thing. Like I said, confusing grammar, hard to understand. The other possibility is that it's the summary statement of the entire rest of the chapter. So, verse 1 is just like summarizing. In the first year, Daniel had this vision. And let me tell you about how this vision went down. He had this vision on the banks of the river. And then 3 weeks later, an angel showed up. And the angel talked to him and gave him all this advice. The problem is the chronology doesn't quite work the way that Daniel records it. Going with that. So you gotta do a little bit of jumping. No matter what, you gotta do a little bit of jumping through hoops to make sense of it. Anybody with me on the options? How that all plays out?
No.
No?
Not really.
So you got two basic options. Sorry. Verse 1 is a summary statement of the whole rest of the book.
Got them.
Or verse 1 is a summary statement of a vision that we don't have any record of that was the catalyst that was setting up the context for the reason that Daniel was mourning and fasting for 3 weeks in verse 2. So he gets some vision, fasts for 3 weeks, and then he gets this second vision about this guy standing in the river, flaming and bright and all that. I lean towards that interpretation because of verse 12, which we'll get to. Maybe it'll make a little bit more sense when we get to verse 12. But. Uh, are these weeks the same? So he said, I just threw this in there because I think it's funny that they don't translate it, but in those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks, he says, right? He actually specifically literally says 3 weeks of days. Yeah. So it literally says. And I think it's because chapter 9, he just got finished getting this 70 weeks prophecy that was weeks of something that wasn't days, right? So he's clarifying for his reader. Okay, now we're talking about weeks that are weeks of days, not weeks of years, alright? Funny little thing. Yeah, clarifies the meaning of chapter 9 a little bit better. But yeah, the words of days is actually in there right after weeks. I found it funny. Fasted from food, water, and bathing for 21 days, right? The way he puts it, I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all. Anointing himself, as in put ointment on, I think is how some translations might render it.
Use no lotions.
Didn't clean himself.
No bath
didn't,
body.
Yeah. didn't make himself pleasant to smell.
But not as bad as Job.
Not as bad as Job. And while he's on the banks of the river Tigris, down at the Ula Canal, maybe, right?
Ooh.
Think back to chapter 8, the vision of the ram and the he-goat. In this vision, he's standing on the banks of the Ula Canal, where the river Tigris and the Euphrates meet. Right? Perhaps we're talking about similar things, a reference back to an earlier vision, when he's at the place that he got the previous vision took place in. And I'm going to say that, yes, actually, these two visions pertain to the same time period. This vision gives, when we get into chapter 11, gives a much more expanded, detailed account of what's going to happen in the time period covered in vision from chapter 8. So I think that's a little allusion. Sorry, I'm sprinting through this because I want to get to the stuff with the man. I'm not really sprinting through this, am I? Man clothed in linen, belt of gold from Ufaz. Ufaz, we don't know what that word means. Probably is a place name, but we just transliterate it Ufaz or Upaz. Body like beryl. Beryl's like a yellow-green limestone or gemstone. Face like lightning, eyes like flaming torches. Arms and feet gleaming like polished bronze. Words like the sound of many big booming kind of words. His voice is mighty. So the question should pop into your minds, who is this guy that he sees?
Who is this guy?
Who is this guy? Three oft-proposed answers. First one, Jesus. Squirrel. Reason for this usually is you read Revelation chapter 1. So this is an answer that New Testament readers will often give because they've read the end of the book. Revelation 1, John's on the island of Patmos. You start in verse 12. He's standing there and he receives this vision. And he turned around and he saw the voice that was speaking to me. And turning the vision, I saw seven golden lampstands. In the midst of the lampstands was one like a son of man, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash around his chest. Hairs of his head were white like white wool, like snow. His eyes were like flames of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze. His voice was like the roar of many waters. So he's being described almost exactly like this guy who shows up in the Daniel chapter 10 vision. So you go, oh, okay, Jesus. Another example, or another answer that some people give would be Antiochus Epiphanes. So the explanation for that comes in chapter 11. He's kind of the main bad dude throughout chapter 11. So this was like the vision that is being explained. Antiochus Epiphanes is the main actor, so that's the guy that we saw. Some unnamed angel. There's another possible answer. So as we're going to see, so he sees this guy, Daniel, passes out. Good night. Every time. Sees this guy, Daniel essentially passes out, but the other guys don't see him, but they run away nevertheless. So guessing they hear his voice or something, or they're just freaked out by some sort of earthquake that happens. But what's Daniel's reaction? Verses 8 and 9, he's left alone. No strength was left in him. His appearance was fearfully changed. He retained no strength. And he heard the sound of his words, the man whom he sees. Hears the words. He falls on his face in a deep sleep with his face to the ground. And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me. That's verses 10 and the first part of 11. So he feels some hand touching him and somebody speaking to him. So, and it becomes clear from the rest of this context that the guy who's talking to him is an angel. So perhaps the guy he just saw is the guy who's talking to him in verse 10 and 11 and 12, and it's an angel. So those are the three possible answers. I'll tell you, I think it's Jesus because of Revelation. The view I go with. Again, lots of these, it's like, doesn't matter too much, not going to affect the interpretation a whole lot. But I like to think about these things, so I think you should too. Anyway.
So he doesn't have a vision, though, he actually sees the moon.
Yeah. He actually sees the guy, and it knocks him off his feet. Right? So there's three little segments of this vision. The first one sees the guy standing in the river. Sees this guy with flaming eyes and all bright standing in the river, and he sort of faints. Then, verse 10, he sort of comes to himself. So somebody read 10 through 15.
The hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you, and stand up, for I have now been sent to you. And when he said this to me, I stood up trembling. Then he continued, do not be afraid, Daniel, since the first day when you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come. While he was saying this to me, I bowed my face toward the ground and was speechless.
So this is like the second section, the second little segment. I have a first explanatory visit. A hand touches him, and somebody's talking to him. It just says, and he said. So, some guy is now there explaining this thing that he just saw to Daniel. Is it the guy that he just saw standing in the water? If you say yes, you're probably going to lean towards interpretation 3. It's the guy standing in the water is some unnamed angel. I'm going to say no, it's somebody different. It's some other angel, not the guy who just saw standing in the waters. I think the guy who just saw standing in the waters is Jesus. But yeah, regardless of it's becomes clear who is this guy. Give me some of the characteristics about him. He explains a little bit about who he is and where he's been, what he's been doing.
He's kind of a messenger because he comes from God in response to Daniel's prayer.
Right. He was sent from God in response to his prayer. And if you know, the word for angel, Malachi, means messenger. The word in Greek, angelos, angel, also means messenger. So the fact that he was sent with a message for Daniel really kind of clues you in, okay, this is an angel, even though the word angel or Malachi isn't actually ever used here. But all through Daniel, angels have been called men, right? A man showed up, and then he does all these things that angels do. Okay. So, yeah, messenger. He's been detained for how long?
21 days.
21 days. How long has Daniel been mourning, fasting?
21 days.
21 days. So, yeah, that's kind of why I think, you know, think back to the beginning of this. I think verse 1 is some other vision. But so, touched me, set me trembling on my hands and knees. So, really get this picture. Daniel is so wiped that he doesn't actually stand all the way up. Right? He sees this vision of this guy standing in the water. He gets wiped out onto his face. And then he feels a hand touch on him, and he gets up on his hands and knees. But he's still not, like, you know, walking, talking.
He hasn't come to yet.
Yeah. And he's still, I would say, afraid. Right? He's not going to look up at this. It is too wonderful, too glorious, too frightful. And he says, "Oh, Daniel, man greatly loved." And I like that translation the best. Man greatly loved. That is God's message to Daniel over and over and over again in this book. It's man greatly loved. I'm in charge, and I will love you. Right. Some of you say, I think, say highly favored or something like that. Of man of high esteem. Loved. Greatly loved is what I would go with. Understands the words that I'm about to tell you and stand up. So, gets him up onto his feet. See, trembling, he stood up. He said to me, "Fear not, Daniel. In the first day that you set your heart to understand and humble yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words." So this is that verse that, like, confused me. He humbled himself before his God. He wants to know something about from God. Does he want to know why has the temple been stopped from being built? Remember, that's my first choice. Or does he want to know what's the meaning of vision from verse 1 of chapter 10 of Daniel? What has he been mourning and fasting about for 3 weeks before he sees this guy standing in the water, right? That's the confusing part of this. So he's been mourning and fasting for 3 weeks, and then he gets this vision of this guy standing in the water, right? So which one is it? What's the deal? Draw your own conclusions, but for one of those two reasons, either I need to understand this vision that I just got, so I'm going to fast for 3 weeks, or why, God, are you not responding to, why are you not letting them build the temple? I'm fasting for 3 weeks because of this. From the very first day we started fasting, God sent somebody. Right? Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard. I have come because of your words.
That's that funky stuff. King of Persia, stop me?
Yeah.
So yeah, here's where we get to the confusing weird stuff.
Maybe it's an actual guy.
Yeah, so the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. The word prince is tsar in Hebrew. Most often it's translated commander or chief. It's translated commander a couple times in Daniel, actually. The Ashpenaz, back in chapter 1, the commander of Nebuchadnezzar's army, tells him not to fast, or tells him about the food. It's commander there. It's been used as prince in chapter 9, or in chapter 8 before. It's used as prince here. I think that the word tsar in this context means angel. And the support I have for that, why I think that, is because of what he says right after that. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me for 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, one of the chief tsars, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia. So we got Michael, who is helping out the guy who's sent to give this vision, to explain this vision, right? So the guy who was sent to explain this vision, we've already said, is an angel. And Michael's helping him, which logically assumes Michael's an angel too. And Michael's described as a prince here. And he says the prince of Persia was the one who was stopping him. So probably what this is like a little bit of a peek into the angelic realm of what's going on behind the scenes. And he's saying that there's angels, and in this case, fallen angels, who are contending against the angels of God. So the one giving this message and Michael, these are two angels of God who are contending against fallen angels like the prince of Persia and the prince of Greece. So demonically motivated kings who are trying to work against God's plans, and good angels who are working against those demonically motivated angels. They're kings. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
further support of that, the only time Michael is ever used, it's either talking about some random guy in Israel. There's like seven or eight places where just a random name Michael shows up in a census. Or it's talking about the archangel Michael mentioned in Jude and Revelation. And it specifically says Michael the archangel. Mm-hmm. Further support that Michael here is called a Tsar, prince, is an angel. So prince of Persia in this context would be a fallen angel. Yeah. I think that's, we haven't gotten that far in the story yet. And haven't had that much revelation. Every follow me on why I think Prince of Persia is an angel and why I think Michael's an angel too and how that all fits. This is, again, one of those where they're like, just throwing that out there. It's the best sense I can make of it, but it's weird. But it came to help him understand.
Why couldn't it be just the king of Persia trying to stop the messenger and then Michael busting them out, like Paul and Silas, or...
And that's a possibility. We could be talking about all humans here. Could be a human guy who was sent to give Daniel an understanding of the interpretation, and the human prince of Persia was stopping him, and Michael is another human guy who's helping. But whatever they are, they all got to be the same class of people. Because you got the guy who's giving the message, who's teamed up with Michael, helping him. So they have to be of a similar ilk. Michael's described as a quote-unquote prince, and the prince of Persia is described with the same word. Right. So they all got to be the same type. Either they're all humans, or they're all angels, or they're all something else that we don't understand. But they're all of the same class. But regardless of all that, what's the point? The point is, he's communicating to Daniel, look, there's stuff that you don't understand that's going on, but God's got it under control. Very first day he sent me, I just got hung up. But guess what? He's still in control. You can still trust him. He's still the one who sets up kings, takes down kings. He's doing it through me and Michael right now. He's going to do it bigger and better ways. Through the guy you just saw in the water, I think, later. But he's come to tell him what's going to happen, and he's going to tell him what's happening in the latter days, the future. Days yet to come. What are the latter days? Well, we're going to talk about that next week, so don't worry about that yet. Verse 15, when he'd spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face to the ground and was mute. So he's looking at the ground. Verse 16, and behold, one like the Son of Man touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke, and I said to him who stood before me. Okay, pause real quick. One like the Son of Man. What do you as New Testament Christians think of when you read that phrase? Jesus, yeah. Favorite name for himself, right?
Mine says, then one who appeared to be a human being.
One who appeared to be a human being, yeah. Literal words are one like a son of Adam. Man. Was touching my lips. That's the most literal translation. And most translators don't render it that way because they don't think this guy is Jesus. And I don't think this guy is Jesus. I think this is just another angel. Because all through this book, angels have been described as men. And Son of Man is not an exclusive title to Jesus. If you read the book of Ezekiel, that's God's favorite term for Ezekiel. Son of Man. He calls Ezekiel Son of Man about 60 times throughout the book of Ezekiel. God calls him Son of Man. It's not an exclusive title for Jesus. So I think they don't like to render it the most literal way because they don't want people drawing the conclusion, oh, this is Jesus.
So in my notes it says, so most Hebrew, one Hebrew along with the Dead Sea Scrolls read something that looked like a man's hand.
Something that looked like a man's hand?
Yes.
I was touching my mouth. I didn't actually. That's good to know. So anyway, where were we? Verse 16. But behold, one... I'm going to say like the Son of Man, because that's what it literally says. But one in the likeness of the children of men, one who looked like a human, touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke, and I said to him who stood before me, O my Lord, by reason of the vision, pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? That's confusing language. My Lord's servant means me. So he put it in. Daniel's saying, O my Lord, how can I talk to you? And again, what Daniel says kind of makes you think, this sounds like Jesus. He's talking to somebody and saying, oh Lord, how can my Lord's servant talk to my Lord? And this is Psalm 48 language. This is Jesus. Addressee. But, again, unclear. For now, no strength remains in me, no breath is left in me. Again, one having the appearance of a man, one like a man, touched me and strengthened me, and he said, O man greatly loved, again, fear not, peace be with you, be strong and of good courage. And as he spoke, I was strengthened. Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. And he said, Do you know why I have come to you? But now I will return and fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except my... We're actually not going to read that part, but I will tell you what's written in the book of truth. That's where we're stopping. This guy, whoever he is clearly of the same ilk as Michael and the guy who was talking before. Is he the exact same guy who's from section 2? And is that the same guy as section 1? I don't know. I actually think... So here's section 1, man standing in the water is Jesus. Section 2, guy who says I was detained for 21 days is an angel. Section 3, one like a son of man is another angel. I think that's what it is. Take that for what it's worth. It's a confusing passage. You gotta figure out these somehow. If it's the same guy between sections 2 and 3, why the switch in description, right? One like a son of man, as opposed to just continuing talking. But he seems to be talking about doing what he was talking about before. I'm going to go back and contend against the king of the prince of Persia, right? So maybe it is the same guy. Confusing stuff. Regardless, he says, and this is the point to really remember and take home. Oh man, I'm over time. You guys should have stopped me. Oh man, greatly loved, do not be afraid. That's what he says.
Should we stop him now?
Yeah, I'm finishing up. Oh man, greatly loved, do not be afraid. That is the point of this text. All right. That's the key. That's the takeaway. What's the point? All this stuff is going on, right? There's angels contending for 21 days, and Michael's fighting, and there's this big demonic war going on that we can't even see and don't have any idea about. But God's in control. The whole point of the book of Daniel, that's the point of this chapter just now, here's the point of the previous chapters before. He's in charge. He's the one doing all this stuff. And so next week, we will talk about what is inscribed in the book of truth, as in the vision, the explanation from this guy, either an angel or Jesus, depending on how you're taking this interpretation. But we'll look at chapter 11 next week and be even more confused. Fun stuff. Sorry, I went a little bit long.
Time
36.
That's
my bedtime. I just like that they always make him stand upright. Yeah. Get up. That's actually one of the arguments people say for why these are all angels. Because they're like, oh no. Yeah. No need to bow down. God, we finally find out. But I don't like that, because if it's Jesus, Jesus often tells the disciples, right, when they're scared, he tells them, no, get up, don't be afraid, I'm here. So, if it's Jesus, the whole point is he's the mediator, he's standing in between you and the wrath of God that you deserve. And that's what Daniel's afraid of. He sees this guy standing in the river, he sees the power and might of God, he sees the just wrath that he deserves, and he cowers, and it doesn't come upon him. Someone stands in the way. Guess who? Anyway. We'll talk more next week. It'll be just as confusing. Can you guess what the point is going to be, though?
God is in control.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. That's the point of the book of Daniel. And so every chapter ultimately comes back to that point.
I like it.
11 next week. Sorry, I felt like I was just yelling at you for the last hour.
You were.